I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality. See, these are the Liberty First principles. And in order to actually uphold them, we have to understand the Constitution. We have to understand the role and duty of those who have taken the oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And I am glad to see that there is a revival of those who are wanting their liberty to be maintained and empowering their oath takers to be oath keepers. And that's what's happened in Coos County, Oregon. Coos County, Oregon has passed an ordinance that says that the sheriff will not be enforcing any unconstitutional laws. And I find that very encouraging. But you see, I found this article on WorldNet Daily, and it's important for us to understand the truth within this this article, because I believe this article is a very accurate representation of the miseducation in America about who the sheriff is. And the article says it's an ordinance passed by Coos County is a sign of the frustration law-abiding gun owners are feeling across the country, the NRA spokesman said. And so when WorldNet Daily then says, but many are questioning its legality. And then it says, I quote, Coos County Sheriff Craig Zani, who is now tasked with deciding which gun laws are in line with the Constitution, told the Oregonian last month that while he is a strong gun rights advocate, he had concerns about whether he had the authority to make those decisions. Well, let me tell you, Mr. Zani, what your real power is. Because you see, you are a direct representative of the people. You are not a hireling of the state. You are not a hireling of the county. You are not even a hireling of the federal government. You are a direct elected representative of the people who is tasked with an oath that you took to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And I love this phrase that WorldNet Daily says. Coos County Sheriff Craig Zani, who is now tasked with deciding which gun laws are in line with the Constitution. Why? Because the people passed an ordinance telling him that he needed to? That's strange, isn't it? So he wasn't tasked with deciding which gun laws are in line with the Constitution or not when he took that oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States? Because I don't believe that he took an oath to support the laws of the federal government. He took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that means when the laws of the federal government contradict the Constitution of the United States, he has an obligation to support the Constitution and not the laws. And that's something that we really, really need to understand here. Because the Supremacy Clause is very clear that laws made by the United States are only the supreme law of the land when they are made consistent with the Constitution. So any law that is not consistent with the Constitution is not the supreme law of the land. And Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper 78 would say, it's no law at all. And so we have a dilemma of ignorance here, not of lack of power. And so, yes, he is concerned with legal challenges. Why? Because we're dealing with a dilemma of ignorance. And the people will use the courts who are ignorant of these issues. And it's amazing in this article, WorldNet Daily went to the Heritage Foundation. And the Heritage Foundation gets it all wrong. It's just stunning to me. Why? Because these Heritage Foundation fellows are lawyers who have been brainwashed in their legal training and brainwashed in the legal system. And we've got to be a people who understand that the Heritage Foundation is getting it wrong on this issue. Here's what, I don't know if I can say this guy's name right. Please forgive me if I get this wrong. His name is Hans von Spakovsky. Hans von Spakovsky, a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, said that the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution leaves, quote, no question that federal law trumps state law, end quote, that any sheriff who violates a state law requirement could run into legal issues. I'm not quite sure how those statements line up, but let's deal with the direct quote. No question that federal law trumps state law. No question. Mr. Spakovsky, you need a better education on the Supremacy Clause, because that is a patently untrue statement. And all we need to do is read the Supremacy Clause to know that the Heritage Foundation has gotten it wrong. The Supremacy Clause reads, this Constitution, comma, and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, semicolon, shall be the supreme law of the land. Now there's language in between the thereof and the end that deals with treaties, but we are not talking about treaties right now. We're talking about the laws made by Congress. And this is a very simple clause, this supremacy clause. Very simple grammar, with no need for legal interpretation of words and collocations. Just a simple grammar. And you can understand what this means. This Constitution, comma, and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, shall be the supreme law of the land. Those are two independent clauses. So you can read them and still be grammatically correct if you read them as two separate sentences. So, correctly speaking, you can say, this Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land. Then it reads, the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, shall be the supreme law of the land. And now we see a clear distinction of what is what, right? A clear distinction. This Constitution is the supreme law of the land without any further requirements. It's the Constitution, so it's the supreme law. The laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, shall be the supreme law of the land, which means, in order for the laws created by Congress to be the supreme law of the land, they must, that's what shall means, they must be made in pursuance to the Constitution in order to be the supreme law of the land. Every law made by Congress is not the supreme law of the land. Only those that are made in compliance with the Constitution. It just simply doesn't get any simpler than that. And for the Heritage Foundation to step up and say, that there is no question that federal law trumps state law, I want to tell you is a very alarming statement to come from America's go-to people on the Constitution. No question that federal law trumps state law? Well, the Supremacy Clause gives great question to that. Because you see, you can't have a federal law be the supreme law of the land and the Constitution be the supreme law of the land at the same time. You can't have it. Because if the federal law is supreme at the same time that the Constitution is supreme, that means that the federal law can be created to trump the Constitution, and then the Constitution is no longer supreme. And that is a paradox. It doesn't work that way. And then Andrew Kloster, who is also a legal fellow at Heritage, says, quote, "The sheriff is an agent of the state." End quote. He is not an agent of the state. The sheriff is not hired by the state. He is not paid by the state. The sheriff is paid by the people. He is a direct elected representative of the people who has taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, and that includes Article 6, Section 2, the Supremacy Clause. And here is what happens. When we take what the Heritage Foundation has believed to be true, which is completely patently false, we fall very into the trap that Alexander Hamilton was warning us about in Federalist Papers 78. He said no legislative act contrary to the Constitution can be valid. To deny this would be to affirm that the deputy is greater than his principal, that the servant is above his master, and that the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves. That men, acting by virtue of powers, may do not only what their powers do not authorize, but what they forbid. No, Heritage, you have it wrong. He already has an obligation to support the Constitution and deny unconstitutional laws. Because he is the sheriff.
Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I have to admit to you that it's very alarming to me that the Heritage Foundation would take this position, a position that is so clearly wrong by a simple reading of the Supremacy Clause and an application of the words of the founders of our Constitution. I mean, after all, Alexander Hamilton is probably the biggest government guy that we have writing in favor of the Constitution, with the exception of Daniel Webster. I don't know who is the bigger nationalist, Hamilton or Webster. Not Noah Webster, Daniel Webster. And even Alexander Hamilton, in Federalist Papers 78, is explaining to us that no, federal law does not trump state law. Only the Constitution trumps state law, and the laws that are in compliance to the Constitution. And so then the next question is this: which laws are compliant with the Constitution? Well, certainly not federal laws that have anything to do with gun control. Really? A well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed? How can the federal government create a gun regulation and can be in compliance with the Second Amendment? They can't. And as a matter of fact, even if there were no Second Amendment, the federal government has no jurisdiction to make gun regulations because it's not a delegated power. We never delegated the authority in the original body of the Constitution to create regulations on the state level for guns. No, that is not how we delegated power. And we should look to the father of the Constitution for some directive of this, not the Heritage Foundation or the Supreme Court. Because you see, the father of the Constitution says in Federalist Papers 45, the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former will be exercised, meaning the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government, principally on external objects. External objects. That's foreign affairs, not state affairs. And then he names them as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. And then the father of the Constitution tells us exactly where the power goes that is not war, peace, negotiation, or foreign commerce, that is not the foreign affairs. He says they're reserved to the states. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which in the ordinary course of affairs concern the lives, liberties, properties of the people, the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state. Writing gun laws is not a federal power. Writing gun regulations is not a federal power. And let me explain something to you. Regulating your right to keep and bear arms is not a power that should belong to the state either. Why? Because it's an alienable right. Your right to self-preservation is an inalienable right. And it's something that we had better start becoming aware of. Our right to keep and bear arms does not come from the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, or the Second Amendment. Our right to keep and bear arms is inherent in our right to retain our life. Samuel Adams wrote in 1772, among the natural rights of the colonists are these, first, life, secondly, liberty, third, property, together with the right to protect and defend them in the best means possible. Your right to keep and bear arms is inherent in that natural right of self-preservation. It is not about hunting, skeet shooting, gun collecting. It's not even about just defense from robbers and rapists. It is much, much larger than that. And as a sheriff takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, he is taking an oath to support and defend the natural rights of the people. We'd better learn that all governments can be tyrannical, and the people shall let no government deny them of their right to self-preservation.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
We had better become very clear on this right of the people to keep and bear arms and the fact that it is not limited to hunting, skeet shooting, gun collecting, and protecting yourselves from robbers and rapists. And if we're going to understand the duty of this constitutional sheriff, because that's what he is, a sheriff who's taken oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of his state, elected by the people as a direct representative of their liberty. and the defense of their liberty. He has an obligation to stand up and defend the people in the face of laws that are not consistent with their liberty, not consistent with the Constitution of the United States or their state constitution. And when I will even suggest to you that his obligation to defend the rights of the people extends to all laws, state or federal. I will remind you of a very unpleasant portion of American history, where our state governments were passing laws that prohibited business owners from serving certain classes of people. See, that's a little bit of history that we forget. The civil rights movement was not against private business owners creating private regulations. The civil rights movement was because the states and local governments had created white-only laws. This was a protest against laws, not against discrimination in private owner business ownership. And that's where we missed this. And I suggest to you that if we had sheriffs who understood the Constitution of the day, of today, of always, this understanding of liberty, there would have been no need for Martin Luther King and those in favor of the civil rights movement to be beaten in the streets by their local law enforcement, to have dogs attack them, to have tear gas thrown on them, for them to be thrown into prison. Because you see, a constitutional sheriff would know that some laws are not lawful. A constitutional sheriff would have changed the entire face of the civil rights movement. A constitutional sheriff would have said, you know, the people have elected me to defend their rights and their liberties. Mrs. Parks, this law is all wrong, and I will not enforce it. So let me tell you what, Mrs. Parks, you sit anywhere you want on the bus, and I'll sit right next to you and escort you home. Because that's what a constitutional sheriff does. A constitutional sheriff does not support laws that are oppressive to the people. A constitutional sheriff does not support laws that take the rights and the liberties from the people, regardless who writes them. And our right to keep and bear arms is no different than that. And we need to understand that. And what's very alarming about what these Heritage Fellows are proclaiming is that if these sheriffs stand up against laws that oppress, bind, or steal the rights of their people, they're wrong. That it's the sheriff's duty to just follow the law. Do you know why that's very alarming? Mr. Spakovsky and Mr. Kloster. Because that's the argument they tried to use in Nuremberg. And it didn't hold up in the courts of Nuremberg. And you're suggesting that it will hold up in the courts of America. As Americans, that should be very alarming to us, and we should be questioning the Heritage Foundation's position on this. The problem is that I think that Kloster and von Spakovsky have been infested with a doctrine of federal supremacy. They have been completely brainwashed into this federal supremacy idea that they are no longer credible in their advice, even though they carry the Heritage Foundation name. Kloster The sheriff is an agent of the state and has to abide by Oregon law. Really? He says if the state passed a law that requires its officials, including the sheriff, to violate the Second Amendment, individual citizens could pursue a lawsuit or he could resign from his job. Well, you know what the problem with Mr. Kloster's statement is he assumes that our right to keep and bear arms comes from the Second Amendment. You don't have a Second Amendment right, because even if the government were to go crazy and change the Second Amendment on its face, a constitutional amendment to change the Second Amendment, that would not eliminate your right to keep and bear arms, because that is an inherent right. Listen to what Justice Blackstone said. Now, this is a jurist that our framers relied on in understanding common law of England and the natural law of the people. He says to vindicate these rights when actually violated or attacked, the subjects of England are entitled first to the regular administration and free course of justice in the courts of law. So they should be petitioning the courts, he says. But when the courts do not protect their rights, Justice Blackstone says, the next right of petitioning the king and parliament for a redress of grievances. So when the courts will not uphold your rights, you petition the government. You say, look, you guys are wrong, and here's where you're wrong, and the courts upholding you are wrong. And then he says, lastly, to the right of having and using arms for self-preservation and defense. That application by the supreme jurist of Great Britain says that your right to keep and bear arms is not about hunting, skeet shooting, gun collecting, or even robbers and rapists. Your inherent right of having and using arms for self-preservation and defense are yours when the courts fail you and the government fails you. It's amazing, because Noah Webster, the guy who wrote the dictionary, said the exact same thing. And I'm stunned that I am using the words of our framers to dispute fellows of the Heritage Foundation. Noah Webster said, before standing armies can rule, the people must be disarmed, as they are in almost every kingdom in Europe. The supreme power in America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword, because the whole body of the people are armed and constitute a force superior to any band of regular troops that can be, on any pretense, raised in the United States. A force at the command of Congress can execute no laws but such as the people perceive to be just and constitutional, for the people will possess the power, and jealousy will instantly inspire the inclination to resist the execution of a law which appears to them unjust and oppressive. Yes, I understand he is talking about the federal government. But let's just look at that from a logical, deductive point here. Viewpoint. Let's look at this. He says, the whole body of the people are armed. And this whole body of the people are armed will resist the execution of a law which appears to them unjust and oppressive. Now, these whole body of people that are armed, where do they live? Do they just possess arms in the federal government? Or do you suppose they possess these arms in their homes? And what would happen if the governor of a state were to pass a law which appears to the people unjust and oppressive? Would they simply lay down their arms and say, oh, the only reason we keep and bear arms is to overthrow the federal government when they create laws that are unjust and oppressive? We are not going to jealously and vigilantly protect our rights from the state, because they're the state. We'll lay down our arms and we'll allow them to oppress us with their laws, because they're the state, after all. And then the state has the power to be oppressive and tyrannical, because, you know, what? Are you stinking kidding me? Natural laws don't apply to the states? Can we please be reminded that Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence. That to secure these rights, the rights of the people, governments, plural, are instituted among men deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. And that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish them. Do you know the best way to alter or abolish a government's oppressive laws denying you your rights? Is the peaceful means of refusing to comply. And your sheriff, who has taken an oath to defend your liberty, has an obligation to support you in your resistance of any law which appears unjust and oppressive to the rights of the people. Listen to what George Mason says. He says, who are the militia? They consist now of the whole people, except a few public officers. We are the militia, not the government.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So, yes, I am very disturbed by the position that the Heritage Foundation has taken through their senior fellows, Von Spakovsky and Kloster, letting us know that even the Heritage Foundation is not immune from the law school brainwashings of federal supremacy. Your sheriff has an obligation to take this stand. He took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. The legislators of Virginia of 1799 called that oath a duty. In that oath, he is a representative of our rights, our natural rights. And our founders were very, very clear what they believed our rights to be and where they came from. And it should be very clear what the duty of the sheriff ought to be. First and foremost, his duty is to protect and defend the constitutionally protected rights of his citizens. We expect that our sheriff, as much as he is able, will help to protect our homes, our property, our lives, and our families from the acts of those who would violate our rights. But James Madison says, where it is said you are to have a right in your property, it is also to equally true that you have a property in your rights. If you want your sheriff to protect your home and your property from those who would take it from you, then you should expect your sheriff to protect the property of your rights as well from anyone who would want to violate them. What happens when the government itself, who takes up the role of one who takes up our rights, the role of a criminal? Is the sheriff bound to uphold the law even when that law violates his oath to the Constitution and seeks to deprive the citizens of their liberty? Of course not. The duty and the obligations of the sheriff do not change even when the violator of our liberty is the government itself. And to fail to protect our liberty from all unlawful activity is dereliction of duty. Do you know I have a chapter in my book, Sovereign Duty, that explains all of this? The role of the sheriff and his duty to protect our liberty. Maybe we should send a few copies to Kloster and Von Spakovsky and educate them a little bit better on the Constitution and the role of the constitutional sheriff. And now that's made some people mad, right? Ooh, Chrisanne is so arrogant to think that she's more intelligent than the Heritage Foundation. Excuse me, but I don't believe any person has the market on truth. And if the Heritage Foundation cannot be challenged when they are wrong, then they are not an institution of truth. They're a cult. And we should not be cult-worshipping foundations or men. And we should be willing to challenge them. Now, in their defense, they both say, the courts will say. But you see, even Blackstone and our framers knew that the courts would be corrupted in favor of large government, and that the courts could be wrong, and that the people have a duty to disobey even court opinions when those court opinions do not follow the Constitution, because yes, the Supremacy Clause follows the courts as well. Your courts cannot make opinions that are contrary to the Constitution, because if they did, then they would be an oligarchy and we would not be a constitutional republic. This education is important to the preservation and the prospering of our liberty. And we should not only ignore the federal government, our state governments, and the courts, but we should ignore the Heritage Foundation when they are wrong as well. God bless. Let's maintain liberty, not cults. God bless. See you tomorrow. Get in our way.